Hare Krishna.
जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, गोपीजन वल्लभ गिरिवरदारी, जय गोपीजन वल्लभ गिरिवरदारी, यशोदानंदन व्रज जन रंजन, यशोदानंदन व्रज जन रंजन, यमुना तीरा वनचारे, यमुना तीरा वनचारे, जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारे, जय गोपीजन गिरिवरदारे, यशोदानंदन व्रज जन रंजन, यमुना तीरा वनचारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारे, जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारे, जय राधा माधव राधा माधव राधे, जय राधा गोपीनाथ राधा गोपीनाथ राधे, जय जय प्रभुपाद प्रभुपाद प्रभुपाद, जय जय प्रभुपाद, नित्य गौर हरिबो हरिबो हरिबो, नित्य गौर हरिबो,
ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 1 चैप्टर 7 entitled The Son of Drona Punished, text number 3.
Tasmin swa ashrame vyaso, tasmin swa ashrame vyaso, badari sandamandite, badari sandamandite, आसीनो अप उपास्पर्श, आसीनो अप उपास्पर्श, प्रणिदद्यु मना स्वयं, प्रणिदद्यु मना स्वयं, तस्मिन् स्व आश्रमे व्यासो बदरी संदमंदिते, आसीनो अप उपस्पृश्य प्रणिदाद्यो मना स्वयं। Tasmin, in that ashram, swe own, ashrame, in the cottage, vyasaha, vyasdev, badari, berry, sanda, trees, mandite, surrounded by, asinaha, sitting, apaha upaspishya, touching water, prandidau, concentrated, manaha, the mind, swayam, himself. Translation: in that place, Srila Vyasadeva, in his own ashram, which was surrounded by berry trees, sat down to meditate after touching water for purification. Purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Under the instructions of His spiritual master Srila Narad Muni, Vyasadeva concentrated his mind in that transcendental place of meditation. Om Agyanti Mirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha
శ్రీ చైతన్య మనోభీష్టం స్థాపితం యేన భూతలే స్వయం రూపా కదా మయ్యం దదాతి స్వపదాంతికం. వందేహం శ్రీగురు శ్రీయుత పదకమలం శ్రీగురూన్ వైష్ణవాంశ శ్రీరూపం సాగ్రజాతాం సహగణారఘునాథాంవితం తం సజీవం సాద్వైతం సావదూతం పరిజనసహితం కృష్ణచైతన్యదేవం శ్రీరాధా కృష్ణపదాం సహగణాలలితా శ్రీ విశాఖాన్వితంశ్చ. హే కృష్ణ కరుణా సింధు దీనబంధు జగత్పతే గోపేశ గోపికాకాంత రాధాకాంత నమోస్తుతే. తప్త కాంచన గౌరాంగీ రాధే వృందావనేశ్వరి వృషభాను సుతే దేవి ప్రణమామి హరి ప్రియ. వంచకల్పతరూభ్యశ్చ కృపాసింధుభ్యేవ చ పతితానాం పావనేభ్యో వైష్ణవేభ్యో నమో నమః. జై శ్రీ కృష్ణ చైతన్య ప్రభు నిత్యానంద శ్రీ అద్వైత గదాధార శ్రీవాత్సాది గౌర భక్తవృంద. హరే కృష్ణ 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 హరే హరే, హరే రామ హరే రామ 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 హరే హరే.
హరే కృష్ణ. I would like to welcome all of you all on this very auspicious day of Vijayadashami Dashera. And because I have been asked to speak on Vijayadashami Day, it's most obvious that I'm expected to speak on Ramayana. Interestingly, this also happens to be the year when my last book of the Ramayana series is coming out, which is the Yuddha Kanda Ramayana. So technically I have been meditating on this pastime for the last several months. So it's most auspicious that I speak about the episode of the killing of Ravan. And so I'm going to focus mainly on two things today. Heralding the Vijayadashami mood and the mood of Dashera, which is the destruction of evil by the good, the win of good over evil. I'm going to focus basically on two aspects. One is the fight of Ram against Kumbhakarna and the fight of Ram against Ravan. Just these two aspects I'm going to focus on. Kumbhakarna represents pride and Ravan represents illusion. How a devotee can deal with pride and illusion. That's what we're going to be discussing today, the whole session. And so I'm going to be narrating the story of the Ramayana, and along with that narration of the story, we'll be having a lot of amazing insights into the mood of these two episodes, you know, how Kumbhakarna was killed and how Ravan was killed. And then as I'm narrating to you all and I'm sharing these insights, you'll realize this is not about Kumbhakarna and Ravan's death at all. It is about our life. It is about our own dealing with pride and our own dealings with illusion, basically. So Ramayana is, any of our scriptures are not just somebody's story. It's our story and is narrated as if it is somebody's story so that it doesn't make us feel bad. We say Kumbhakarna was a proud fellow. Very easy to say it. You say, I'm a proud fellow, very difficult to say it, right? So the scriptures give us a very easy way to accept and deal with our own anarthas, our own shortcomings. So let us discuss Kumbhakarna's story. And while discussing Kumbhakarna's story, we're actually discussing our story, right? And then when we discuss Ravan's story, we're actually discussing our story again, you know. So that's the way in which we're going to discuss today. So Kumbhakarna, so he was brought into the war of Ramayana much later, you know. practically more than half the army of Ravana was destroyed, and then Kumbhakarna is brought in. So Kumbhakarna was a very sleepy person, slept for 6 months at a stretch, and then one day he would get up. In that one day, he would do all the bad things that he missed doing in the last 6 months, basically, you know, just making up for all of that. So when Kumbhakarna was woken up, it took him a lot of energy to wake up Kumbhakarna. Interestingly, in the Ramayana, Ram had a brother who never slept. Lakshman didn't sleep for 14 years, literally, you know. And Ravan had a brother who always slept, you know. So Ravan was so upset with this thought that Ram has a brother that never sleeps and my brother is always sleeping, you know, that he told his people, go and wake up this fellow. It's very interesting if you look at it from that perspective, you know. So it's fortunate to have relatives, too fortunate to have people who love you and who are ready to make sacrifices for you. And it's very difficult to have people who always expect you to make sacrifices for them. So, Kumbhakarna, when he was woken up, I'm not getting into details of what was done to wake him up. You know, really took a lot of effort to wake him up. And one of the most important things that was involved in waking him up was there were people that were standing on two sides of his ears. 2 ears of Kumbhakarna. He had huge ears. Karna means ears. And Kumbhakarna means ears which are huge like a pot. So he had huge ears. And one of the important things in waking him up was people had to stand on two sides of his ears and speak his glories in both his ears. A proud person loves to hear about himself. And that's what Kumbhakarna is. So only when sufficiently his glories were sung in his ears, then this fellow would stir and he would wake up, basically. Yeah. So, finally, when Kumbhakarna was woken up, you know, he was told about the situation. Of course, when he was woken up, he first ate a lot in anger. That why I'm woken up from sleep, you know. Almost every person has a little Kumbhakarna in them when they're woken up from sleep, you know. You can, especially small children, you can see that very well. You know? The Kumbhakarna effect of being woken up before wanting to wake up. So Kumbhakarna, when he was woken up and told about the situation in which the army was and what all had happened in Lanka, during the Kumbhakarna sleep, you know, Hanumanji burned Lanka and went away. During Kumbhakarna sleep, so many things happened basically. And now that he is woken up, he is told that the war is in a crucial phase and you have to help. Kumbhakarna gets up and walks to the battlefield. So Ravan tells Kumbhakarna to take an army along with him. Kumbhakarna says, no, I'll go alone. So the reason Ravan brings Kumbhakarna at this point is because he wants to create a lot of physical and psychological damage to the Vanaras. Just looking at the size of Kumbhakarna, it is enough to create fear. And the amount of destruction that Kumbhakarna is going to do, it's going to create a lot of fear. So that is why Ravan sends Kumbhakarna. And Ravan wants to send Kumbhakarna with an entire army. Kumbhakarna says, no, I'll go alone. So pride always walks alone. The nature of pride is that a proud person doesn't want to cooperate with others. The reason Kumbhakarna went alone is because he wanted the full credit of victory to go only to him. The nature of pride is that it cannot handle competition. It cannot handle cooperation also, you know. So the natural thought of a proud person is that I just want to, you know, do it alone. So Ravan, so Kumbhakarna, he refused to take an army along with him, you know. So all other anarthas or vices need company of other vices. You know, usually lust and anger go together, you know. Many of the anarthas actually are going side by side, you know. When there is greed, there will also be lust, there will also be anger, there will also be, you know, illusion. So many of the anarthas go hand in hand. But pride always comes alone. It's a special anartha that doesn't want anybody along with it. Alone he'll walk, basically. So Kumbhakarna was, he preferred to take all the credit. And interestingly, the nature of pride is that pride is enough to destroy all the credits of all good you have done. That's the nature of pride. So when pride comes in, all your spiritual credits get destroyed one after another. Yeah, that's why Kumbhakarna was sent into this time in the war. And interestingly, as soon as the Kumbhakarna walked in, the Vanaras started getting scared. They were really fearful. And without they even realizing it, hundreds of them were being killed just by Kumbhakarna walking, basically. So, usually, when a spiritual practitioner sees something like Kumbhakarna coming towards them, attacking them, they are very excited. So the Vanaras are very excited when they saw Kumbhakarna come in. So all of them, without realizing what it takes to destroy Kumbhakarna, they ran to attack him together. And the result was that all of them got destroyed. So when a spiritual practitioner is in the initial phase of one's spiritual practice, there's a lot of excitement. And in that excitement, you cannot deal with pride. And a lot of mistakes are made by sadhakas when you try to deal with pride alone. To help us deal with pride, we need Ram. We need the strength of God. It is not easy to deal with pride on your own. We do a little spiritual practice. And by doing a little spiritual practice, we think we are equipped to deal with Kumbhakarna. And in that excitement, we think, you know, I have done so much chanting, I have done so much tapasya, now I'll go and deal with pride. You go and deal with it, pride will eat you up. So many spiritual practitioners get eaten up by pride. So you may be able to conquer anger, lust, envy, all that you may be able to conquer. But you get stuck at level of pride. Pride eats you up. And that's a very interesting thought, because so many sadhakas, when they begin their journey of spiritual life, they can easily overcome many of the smaller anarthas. But they get badly stuck when it comes to pride. Because pride cannot be dealt on your own. You need the help of the Supreme Lord to help you deal with pride. So the Vanaras, when they saw that they were getting trampled and, you know, beaten up like anything, Kumbhakarna just pick up the Vanaras and put them into his mouth. And so many of the Vanaras, he was eating them alive. And so many of them were inside his mouth and they were crawling out. Some of them were coming out from his nose, you know. Somehow the other just trying to escape from his teeth, you know, biting them. So Kumbhakarna had this massive spear in his hand with which he was attacking the Vanaras. And Ram, when he saw Kumbhakarna walk in, such a huge demon, Ram went to Vibhishan and he asked him, who is this person? Ram asked Vibhishan, you know, how do you deal with him? Who is this person? So Vibhishan began to describe in great detail about his brother, Kumbhakarna. And after the graphic description, Ram understood what they are dealing with. So Kumbhakarna and Ram's, as Kumbhakarna walked in, all these Vanaras were attacking one by one. So first they all attacked together. And then the heroes, the leaders among them started attacking. So Angad went and attacked first. When Angad attacked, he took a huge rock and went and smashed it on Kumbhakarna's chest. After Angad did that, Kumbhakarna just smacked him with his left hand. And Angad flew in another direction and fell on a mountain, you know. He fell unconscious. Then Hanumanji attacked Kumbhakarna. Kumbhakarna beat Hanumanji so intensely that Hanuman began to vomit blood. So when the Vanaras saw that Hanuman, who is like the most powerful among them, is like really in a bad shape, they realized this guy can't be attacked like this. So all of them began to run here and there, you know. And in the meanwhile, Sugriv realized that I need to do something. So Sugriv came running in. And he rushed towards Kumbhakarna. And as Sugriva was running, Kumbhakarna threw his spear at Sugriva. And as the spear of Kumbhakarna was rushing towards Sugriva, There was absolutely nothing this Suguriva could have done. But to the shock of the Vanaras, right in the middle of the air, the spear broke into two. Because Hanumanji jumped, and with his knees, he hit the spear of Kumbhakarna and it broke into two. Imagine an iron spear breaking into two. So Kumbhakarna, he was really, really angry at his spear being broken away. Then he took out a massive tree and he smashed on Sugriva. And Sugriva fell unconscious. Kumbhakarna picked up Sugriva, put him under his armpit and walked away. He started going back to Lanka. And the Vanaras are shocked, looking at their leader in the armpit of Kumbhakarna, and he's going into Lanka. So in the meanwhile, as Kumbhakarna was walking into Lanka, Sugriva was unconscious, obviously. Hanumanji wanted to go and try to save him. But Hanumanji realized, I should not go to help him. You know why? Because Hanuman was very sensitive. If Sugriva is a leader among them, it's his fight right now with Kumbhakarna. So if Hanuman goes and intervenes in between and saves Sugriva, Sugriva will feel hurt. Sugriva will feel bad that, I took help from somebody else for my fight. So Hanuman didn't intervene purposely. He was waiting to see what Sugriva will do. Just like Kumbhakarna represents pride, Sugriva represents knowledge. If Kumbhakarna can defeat Sugriva, it simply means that pride can defeat knowledge. So, in fact, a lot of people in this world are very knowledgeable people. Those very knowledgeable people only become proud. Isn't it? So, it's not that if you are knowledgeable, you can deal with pride. In fact, if you are knowledgeable, there's a good chance you'll become proud. So Kumbhakarna kept Sugriva under his armpit and walked away. It indicates that knowledge, when subjugated by pride, it becomes useless. And at some point, Sugriva, when he was under the armpit of Kumbhakarna, they were walking into Lanka. And as they were walking into Lanka, there was a reception for Kumbhakarna in Lanka. They were throwing flowers, they were sprinkling scented waters. And that scented water fell on Sugriva's face, and he woke up. So what was celebration, it helped Sugriva wake up. So Kumbhakarna at that point, he had put Sugriva on his shoulders, because he thought his fellow was unconscious. And Sugriva got up. And Sugriva realized, I cannot kill Kumbhakarna. That much he came to know. But I can damage him in some way. So Sugriva jumped up, bit off the ears of Kumbhakarna. He just bit off one ear of Kumbhakarna. Imagine, with his teeth. And then he jumped and he bit off the nose of Kumbhakarna. Interestingly, Sugriva, when he was caught by Kumbhakarna, he thought, I may not be able to kill pride, but at least I can cause some damage to pride, basically. So Sugriva struck Kumbhakarna at his weak points. The weak point of a proud person is his ears. As I said, remember, proud person loves to hear a lot about himself. And Sugriva bit off the ears only. So he hit Kumbhakarna at his weak point, basically. And when his ears were damaged, Kumbhakarna did not want to go back into Lanka. Because he was thinking, how can I enter back into the city with my ears bit off, right? A proud person doesn't want to be seen by others as defeated, as lost, basically. So he came out again. Kumbhakarna came out back again to fight, basically. The nature of a proud person is always, what will others think about me? That's the nature of a proud person. A proud person is always thinking, what others will think about me? The nature of a knowledgeable person is, he is not bothered about what others will think of me. He is bothered about, am I doing the right thing? And what the Lord thinks about me. This is the difference between pride and knowledge. Pride connects you with the world, and knowledge connects you with God. So, Sugriva, he realized at one point, as he was being caught by Kumbhakarna, that I cannot fight with Kumbhakarna directly, but I can fight with him if I stand behind Ram. So Sugriva ran off, after biting his ears and nose, Sugriva ran and stood behind Ram, basically. That is the way to deal with pride. You cannot deal with pride directly on your own, by your own strength. You put God in the front and you stand at the back. And with the power of the Lord, you can deal with pride. So Sugriv, he ran back and resumed his position. In the meanwhile, Kumbhakarna was really, really angry. He was not just now angry because, you know, he faced a defeat, but he was angry because he was mutilated. You know? Body parts were removed. So he realized, no point in fighting with these monkeys. These monkeys are all useless. Let me go and attack Ram and Lakshman directly. So he went to attack Lakshman straight. So Lakshman started shooting one after another arrows at Kumbhakarna. And no matter how many arrows were piercing Kumbhakarna, nothing was happening to him. Like, you know, for some people, how much ever you do acupressure, nothing happens, right? Some people are, I don't know, thick-skinned or whatever it is. You know. So Kumbhakarna's body was so tough that the arrows were not piercing only through him. And Kumbhakarna picked up a very heavy iron hammer and he began to run towards Ram. He didn't even bother about Lakshman. Though Lakshman was fighting with him, he just, you know, brushed away Lakshman and began to run towards Ram. Because he realized, if I kill Ram, the war is over, basically. So when Ram saw, Kumbhakarna run towards him with that hammer in his hand, Ram realized that I need to do something to stop this guy. So Ram began to shoot arrows. The very arrows that would pierce through Vali and kill Vali with one arrow, the same arrows were ineffective on Kumbhakarna. Nothing really bothered Kumbhakarna at all. And as he was walking towards Ram, hundreds of monkeys were being crushed towards death. When he was close enough, he swung that hammer very, very hard to hit Ram. And at that point, Ram put an arrow called Vayavastra. And he timed his shot to perfection. And as the hand was coming towards him, Ram shot his hand, the whole hand came out. The hand of Kumbhakarna flew out and the hammer fell. And Kumbhakarna suddenly lost momentum when he lost one of his hands. And he didn't realize for a few moments that he actually lost his hand. And then when he realized, the pain really began to shoot. Blood was flowing out from his arms. And then he picked up a tree and he was running towards Ram to kill him. And then Ram shot another arrow and lopped off the second arm of Kumbhakarna. And in a flash, before Kumbhakarna could react, Ram dropped his bow and ran towards Kumbhakarna, removing two of his swords. Agastya had given him two swords, and these two swords could be used only by a person who was ambidextrous. Ambidextrous means that one who could use both his hands. Ram removed both his swords, ran towards Kumbhakarna, and even before Kumbhakarna could react, Ram slashed off both the legs of Kumbhakarna. So now Kumbhakarna lost his hands, his whole body collapsed, he lost his legs, and now he was using his thighs to wriggle towards Ram so that he can eat him up with his mouth. One left, you know, whatever his capacity was. Now looking at Kumbhakarna, even at this stage, so determined to kill him, Ram did something amazing. Ram shot a huge number of arrows and filled the mouth of Kumbhakarna with arrows. The entire mouth of Kumbhakarna was filled with hundreds and thousands of arrows. And he could not say anything. He could not speak anything. So ears and nose are like the center of pride. You know, ears because you like to hear good things about yourself. And nose because you carry your nose like that, you know, high in the air. This is an element of pride involved in the nose, right? So when Sugriv cut off the ears and nose of Kumbhakarna, Kumbhakarna's ego was very hurt. Before killing Kumbhakarna, Ram covered his mouth with arrows. Why? Why did Ram cover his mouth with arrows? A proud person loves to hear about his own glories. But when he can't hear about his own glories, he starts speaking his own glories. Right? Nobody tells anything about you, you tell about yourself. That's the nature of pride, you know. So if you wait for some time to hear somebody is glorifying you, if after a long wait you don't realize that nobody is going to glorify you, chalo, let me glorify myself, you know. So that is the nature of pride. You know, you end up glorifying your own self. So, Sugriv cut off his ears to prevent him from hearing praise, and Ram blocked his mouth to prevent him from speaking his own praise. Then, so essentially Ram cut off his arms. What does arms represent? Arms represent the idea of comparative mindset. Me and you, right? So you, with arms you can do things. You can do action, right? So the nature of the hand is a comparative, it's compared to a mindset that compares with others. I can do this much, you can do this much. I can do better than you, you can, I know, you can't do better than me. So it's a comparative mindset, you and me, basically. So, what happened now? He was eager to hear through his ears, ears are gone. He was eager to speak through his mouth, mouth is gone. He was eager to compare himself with others with his hands, hands also gone. And now, a proud person with all avenues to, you know, to you know, speak up or to hear his own praise or to compare himself with others gone, pride dies a slow death. That is the way in which we deal with pride. First, we take shelter of the Lord, and with the help of the Lord, we help us stop hearing, or rather, help us aspire to stop hearing about our own glories. And then we stop speaking about our own glories. And then we stop comparing ourselves with others. So then finally, after, Ram cut off the hands, legs, and filled the mouth of Kumbhakarna with arrows, Ram shot one last arrow. And the last arrow chopped off the head of Kumbhakarna, flew with the head of Kumbhakarna, and it dropped it right at the gate of Lanka. So the whole head of Kumbhakarna, filled with arrows in his mouth, dropped right at the gate of Lanka. It was like a big statement. And that was how Kumbhakarna died. And as soon as the head of Kumbhakarna was lopped off and it was sent to the gates of Lanka, the body of Kumbhakarna just rolled off and fell into the ocean. So now, so far we have been seeing the way in which Kumbhakarna was behaving. Now we're going to see the way in which Ravan behaves. And as he is the bigger brother, his behavior is a little more stranger than the way Kumbhakarna behaves. So Ravan, when, of course, after this many, many things happened, which I'm not going to get into, I'm just straight going into Ravan's fight with Ram. Ravan, he represents illusion. The illusion that I am the doer, the illusion that, you know, without me nothing can happen, you know, the illusion that nobody can defeat me. There are so many illusions that Ravan carries. So this whole, the story of Ram-Ravan war represents at so many levels, so many things. One of the first things that, Ravan represents is the illusion that I can win no matter what. So, no matter how many people were advising Ravan, it's not that people didn't advise Ravan. So many people advised Ravan, including his own wife, Mandodari, his brother, so many, even Hanumanji came and gave advice to Ravan. Angad came gave advice to Ravan. So many people gave advice to Ravan. But the nature of illusion is, no matter how much advice you get, a person in illusion convinces himself that he is right and everybody else is wrong. So, Ravan lost literally everyone. All his sons were dead. All his brothers were dead, except obviously Vibhishan. And all his most powerful ministers were dead. His own sons were dead. The sons of his sons of his brothers were all dead. Kumbhakarna's children, everybody, all practically everybody in his family wiped out. But still, somehow Ravan is in the illusion that he can win. The last war of Ram Ravan is a very interesting war. Because just before the when Ravan comes out of his palace, so by the time the Vanaras were thinking that practically everybody is dead and the war is almost over, because only Ravan is left. But Ravan had a last strategy, very interesting strategy. Ravan, he came out with a huge army, and the Vanaras were very shocked. How did such a huge army come out from Lanka? Because they have already killed thousands and thousands of soldiers. Interestingly, Ravan had a personal army that he never exposed so far in the war. The Ram Ravan war, the entire war has lasted for 7 days. Out of the 6 days of this war, this army that Ravan brought out never came out only. So they were all fresh and energetic, you know. So Ravan only brought this army when he himself would come out. So he kept it right for the end, basically. So there were 100,000 chariots, 300,000 elephants, 60 million horses, each carrying warriors, and countless foot soldiers. And in the middle of this whole formation was Ravan's chariot. It was a massive golden chariot, drawn by 8 horses. It was equipped with unlimited weapons. And this entire army of Ravan was very, very powerful army. So as Ravan came out of this army, something really shocking happened. As the army was coming out, Ravan was full confident that he will be able to do things. That's the nature of illusion. Suddenly a huge vulture came and sat on his chariot. And that vulture was not moving out only. Ravan is trying to shoo it away. The vulture is just not moving out. The vulture was super confident that this guy is going to die soon, you know. So when all the soldiers of Ravan saw this vulture sitting on Ravan's fly or Ravan's chariot, they realized this is an ill omen, basically. The nature of illusion is they don't take signs seriously. People in illusion, even if they get very clear indications, don't do this, they will still do it. Because that is the nature of illusion. The illusion convinces you, you are an exception. It won't happen to you. This ill omen doesn't mean anything to you. So Ravan, he ignored that vulture and he focused on the war, basically. And he turned his attention towards Ram directly. He invoked a Rahu missile and he attacked Ram. And the arrow straight hit the forehead of Lord Ram. The arrow straight went into the forehead of Lord Ram. But Ram remained totally unaffected. He removed the arrow from his forehead and he put on a Rudra missile. And he shot towards Ravan. And when the Rudra missile hit Ravan, it just collapsed on the ground. Nothing happened to Ravan at all, you know. Not a scratch on his body. And then Ram and Ravan started shooting so many missiles at each other. And, you know, for those of you all who have seen that old Ramananda Sagar, zoop, zoop, that arrows in half an hour, only that is going on. So essentially that's what is going on here. So I'm not getting into those details. So at some point when, Ram Ravan war grew at its peak, you know, so Lakshman intervened and he tried to, you know, come in between and try to save Ram. And Ravan throws a spear at Ravan, at Lakshman, known as Shila. Shila is the name of the weapon he throws. And the weapon goes into Lakshman's body and Lakshman collapses. And of course, Sushena, he comes to inspect Lakshman. So when Lakshman collapses, Ram gets so angry, he shoots so many arrows at Ravan that Ravan runs away. He just flees from the battlefield. And the Vanaras come and attack and help Lakshman. So eventually, you know, the Hanumanji goes and gets a mountain and, you know, Lakshman is revived. At this point, Ravan comes back for his second attack. So when Ravan is coming back, Vibhishan has a doubt. So Vibhishan sees Ravan coming with his chariot and he looks at Ram. He feels bad for Ram. He tells Ram, "My dear Ram, how will you fight against this fellow? He has such a huge chariot, you don't have any chariot at all. He has so many weapons on his chariot, you don't have anything literally. You're only carrying a bow and a few swords. And he has an armor to guard him, you have nothing. You don't even have slippers, Bharat took the slippers away, you know." So Vibhishan is feeling very bad for Ram, that Ram is in such a bad situation and Ravan is so equipped. It's not an equal war. Ram tells Vibhishan something amazing. He tells him, "Don't worry, I am having a chariot." And he says, "I am standing on Dharma Ratha. My chariot is Dharma. Dharma is my chariot." And he said, "I am wearing an armor. My armor is Sadguna, good qualities. That is my armor." And he said, "I am carrying a weapon. I am carrying so many missiles. Knowledge is my weapons." And he's saying, "I am a good chariot driver also. Apparently there is nothing." So Ram says, "My chariot driver is my sadhana. my spiritual practices. So Ram is trying to tell Vibhishan that just because we don't have any external equipments doesn't mean that we're not internally equipped. A lot of people look for external equipments, external things to convince them that they are equipped enough. But actually, there is a lot of equipment that happens on an internal level. Confidence is not just based on, your equipments or your what you're carrying. Confidence is based a lot on how you perceive your purpose. Like yesterday, I was doing a Facebook Live and I was telling this point that the Vanaras, they had nothing. They only had sticks and stones. And whatever trees they could get their hand on, they were using it like that only, And they never had much training of warfare and all that. They were just brute force. But the Lanka army had the most sophisticated equipments, the most sophisticated training. And they were all powerful people. These Vanaras, for so many months, they were living in the forest and hardly anything to eat. But interestingly, when the Vanaras are fighting against Ravan's army, they were roaring like lions. The question is, where does their confidence come from? To roar like a lion when you don't have anything, So when you have fully equipped, then you can roar like a lion, it makes sense. But these guys have nothing, but they are so confident. That is the power of being on the right side. Righteousness gives you a certain type of confidence that nothing else can give you. So Ravan, though he was very equipped, he was scared. Ram, though he was hardly equipped, he was not scared. Because he had a purpose which was right. And that is the power of perspective. That's the power of what righteousness gives you. And Vibhishan was very impressed by when he heard Ram speak like that. So as Vibhishan and Ram were speaking like this, suddenly out of thin air, a chariot appeared in front of Ram. So they were just talking about chariots. And a chariot appeared over here. Indra sent his personal chariot for Lord Ram to fight. And this was drawn by 1,000 horses, which are green in color. And fully loaded with weapons and a protective armor. And it was driven by an expert chariot driver named Matali. And, Matali appeared in front of Ram. And he told, "My master Indra sent this chariot for you. Please accept it, And Indra, Ram obviously, he accepted the chariot of Indra. Now the question is, the war is almost over. Seventh day. Last fight literally. Why is sending chariot now? Ideally, Indra should have sent on first day, right? When everything is over, he's sending chariot now. Formality, So some people are like that. Just send for formality. You say, "Main tha aapke saath." So what is the logic behind Indra sending chariot on the last day? There are many reasons why Indra sent the chariot on the last day. One of the reasons was, the most important reason was, Indra had a strong intuition, feeling that Ravan only will win. Because he has all previous experiences of defeat, See, when you have always faced failure in your life, there is always that if Ravan wins, what will happen to me, So imagine, the situation where he gave a chariot first day only, and Ravan won. Then what would happen to him, Ravan would have really taken him to task, right? So this confidence and the lack of, surety is very, very complicated for a human being. Especially if you have faced multiple failures in your life. It kind of shakes your faith in God also. So Indra didn't want to take a risk. And he always had this doubt. If Ravan wins, what will happen, So he didn't send only in the beginning, But now when he saw almost Ravan, everybody else is gone, only Ravan is left. There's a good chance that Ram will win. Probably he did some statistics and probability theory and all that. And he came to know that Ram is going to win, so he sent the chariot now, And then of course, now he sent the chariot because when Ram's name will be taken in history, Indra's name also will appear somewhere, right? Indra's chariot he won, The second thought is that God never asks us anything. He is Aptakama. He has no need. He has no desires. Absolutely no desires at all. But if you give willingly, he will accept. He accepted Indra's chariot. So by accepting Indra's chariot, Ram is telling the world The moment a positive thought arises in your mind, do it that time only. If you want to do good for someone, don't think and analyze so much. If I do this, what will happen? If I do that, the moment you get a good thought of helping someone, do it that moment. When Vibhishan comes to Sugriv, he wants to surrender to Lord Ram. So Sugriv tells Vibhishan, like a typical bureaucratic devotee, he tells him, Ram is very busy. He can't meet you now. Vibhishan tells him something amazing. He tells him, I'm a demon. And I have developed a desire to surrender to Ram now. Please allow me to surrender, otherwise my mind might change. So then Sugriv realizes better to take him to Ram. So whenever you feel like doing good, immediately do it. So Indra's chariot is a reward of doing good activities, punya. And the carriage of dharma, so essentially, Indra had fought many battles sitting on the same chariot against Ravan. And he lost every battle. So Indra didn't have confidence whether by sitting on this chariot, Ram will win or not, So he was hesitating to send the chariot because the chariot has seen many defeats in the past. So the idea is that one has to learn to go above punya and papa. So ideally, Indra was doing punya by sitting on the chariot and trying to fight against adharma. But you cannot win against adharma only by doing punya. To win against adharma, you have to rise above punya also. Rise above punya and rise above papa. So only at that level you can fight against adharma. And Ram was at that level. So of course, Ram got on the chariot of Indra and the fight between Ram and Ravan was taking place. And the Ram-Ravan fight was so powerful, so intense that everyone stopped fighting. Ravan's army stopped fighting. Vanara army stopped fighting. Everybody stopped fighting and they were just looking at the Ram-Ravan war going on, And it was so powerful. Ram shot so... When he saw Ravan, like that for the first time in a direct conflict, Ram got so angry, shot so many arrows at Ravan. Ravan fell unconscious. He literally fell unconscious. And when Ravan fell unconscious, the chariot driver of Ravan took him away, very far away from the battlefield, to a place near the river. Giving him water to drink and all that. Ravan got up. He got so angry on his chariot driver for taking him away from the war. Started shouting at him first. The chariot driver got angry on Ravan. He said, what nonsense? I saved your life. And instead of saying thank you, you're shouting at me as soon as you get up. And then finally Ravan understood that this is not time to say, shout at him. So they got on the chariot and they were coming back to the battlefield. So when Ravan was away from the battlefield for some time, something mystical happened on the battlefield. Right in front of Ram, suddenly appeared Agastya Muni. Agastya is the one of the gurus of Ram. Ram had many, many gurus. And it's amazing how Ram, being the Supreme Lord, he actually loved to learn from the sages so much. And Agastya Rishi appeared in front of Ram at that point. And Agastya Rishi gave Ram the Aditya Hridaya Mantra. It's a sun invocation. And Ram chanted the Aditya Hridaya Mantra. Agastya Rishi told him that it is important to take shelter of sun at this point. First, for two reasons. One, Ram's energy was depleted like anything because of so much of the fight. And second was, the sun helps you deal with negative energy. So whenever you don't see the sun for too long, energy gets feel drained. A lot of people have the pandemic because of not being exposed to the sun. They're actually having so many health issues. And the simple solution is go and stand in the sun. That's all. That is the solution for a lot of problems, basically. So Ram chanted the Aditya Hridaya Mantra. And then Ram sees Ravan coming again in the chariot. Ram tells Matali, his driver, "Oh Matali, drive immediately to my greatest enemy Ravan. And while you're approaching him, be very cautious." Ram tells Matali like that. And suddenly, Ram stops speaking. For a moment, he has he thinks. And then he changes his tone of speaking. And the next thing Ram says is just amazing. This is one of the most powerful lessons in leadership. Ram tells Matali, I'm sorry to speak to you in an instructive tone. He said, I'm not your master. Ram tells him, you know. And he says, forgive me for speaking like that in an instructive tone. And, you know, he said, I have full confidence in you. You do what is best. He just leaves it at that. Matali, he is embarrassed. Because he has driven for many masters in the past. Most masters are used to ill-treating their drivers. That's true today also, right? But here, for the first time, Matali is experiencing that someone who is sitting on the chariot is actually respecting him. So Matali's confidence in his own driving increases so much, and his dedication to Ram increases so much more. Most people in life, what they're looking for is a little respect. You don't have to give them a lot. You don't have to give them money. You don't have to give them resources. That's not what most people's main need is. That is important. But more important is self-esteem. A little bit of self-respect. If a person is given a little bit of respect by whoever is the employer or leader, it does so much to the confidence level and to the dedication level of the person. So Ravan genuinely used people. And Ram genuinely loved people. Love is the foundation of all relationships. And love is founded on respect. And use is founded on exploitation. So love cares for other people's feelings. And use cares only for output. So Ram dealt with Matali with great care and with great humility. And Ravan dealt with his driver with ingratitude and with harshness. Ram chose his words very carefully, you know, making sure that he did not hurt his driver. And Ravan, he kept insulting his driver like anything, you know. And, without bothering to figure out what he's feeling and how he's feeling, basically. In the Ram-Ravan war, we find something very interesting, that during the whole war, whenever there was any Vanara died, Ram would instruct that the Vanara's body be preserved, kept on the side. We'll cremate the Vanara later nicely. And whenever any Rakshasa died, Ravan's clear instruction was throw him into the ocean. So any Rakshasa died, they threw the body into the ocean. Why? Because he didn't want the enemy to have a count of how many people died on his side. So he wanted the enemy to be always guessing. So when Hanumanji brought that Parvat, Sanjeevani mountain, as soon as the mountain came, all the dead Vanaras woke up. And all the guys who died, who were inside the ocean, they didn't get up. The Rakshasas. So, interestingly, Ram respected a person not only when the person was alive, but even after the person is dead. Respect is not only when the person is present in front of you, but respect is even when the person is not present in front of you. That's what shows your character. So, a lot of people respect nicely, behave nicely when the person is in front. But when the person is not there, at the back, you give them all kinds of bad words and all kinds of, you know, disrespectful dealings, right? This is the difference between Ram and Ravan's ideologies. So when Ravan was back, his body had wound had healed a lot, but his ego was hurt a lot. He began to shoot so many arrows at Ram, and then Ram also began to shoot. At some point during the fight, Ram shot an arrow, cut off the head of Ravan, and the head of Ravan rolled off, and everybody was shocked. They thought war is over. Ravan's head is gone, you know. But they got the shock of their life when they saw one new head coming up, you know. So then Ram began to shoot so many arrows, cutting off all the limbs of Ravan, cutting off the hands, cutting off the head. And interestingly, all the limbs of Ravan are getting replaced. Every limb was falling off, it was growing again. And most interestingly, the limbs that were falling off were there only. The head that was fallen off Ravan was there. So on the battlefield, there were hundreds of heads of Ravan lying around him. Hundreds of hands of Ravan lying around him. But still, Ravan was intact and very much alive. So Ram, he was shocked. He went to Vibhishan and he said, impossible to kill this fellow like this. How do you kill him? And then Vibhishan, at that point, he revealed the secret of the death of Ravan. That he has nectar in the navel, basically. There's a particular type of arrow, which is known as a Brahmaban. Only that arrow can kill Ravan. And then, of course, there's a whole story of how Hanumanji goes and finds that arrow in Lanka. Mandodari has hidden that arrow somewhere, you know. Hanumanji goes and finds that arrow and gets it. And then Ram shoots that arrow at the navel of Ravan, and then Ravan dies. Interestingly, I just thought I'll analyze this part a little bit about the heads of Ravan rolling off. What do you learn from this episode of, you know, one after another Ravan's heads rolling off and all the limbs rolling off? There are some very interesting insights that we can learn from the rolling off of Ravan's heads, basically. Being Dashera, I thought is a very good meditation to have. One of the understandings is that the 10 heads of Ravan represents the 10 types of intelligences a human being should have. So this was one of the boons offered by Lord Brahma. So each head of Ravan was excellent in one aspect. One head was excellent in politics. One head was excellent in Vedic texts. One head was excellent in administration. One head was excellent in enjoyment. You know, all ideas of enjoyment would come in that head only, you know. So like that, each head of Ravan had an expertise, basically. So when Ravan was planning to kidnap Sita, he consulted all his 10 intelligences. And all his 10 heads gave suggestions to him what he should do. 9 of his 10 heads rejected the idea. They said, don't do it. 9 heads told him, don't do it. But his original first head, that didn't agree. That's why he kidnapped Sita. So his original head was in the biggest illusion, basically. The extra 9 heads had some intelligence at least in it. So Ravan was so stubborn, he didn't listen to the advice of his own heads. What to speak of other people's heads? That's the nature of illusion. You know? That is the extent to which you can be an illusion. Even you yourself can't help yourself. So Ram kept cutting off Ravan's heads, but they kept growing back again and again. So what is the significance of this head-cutting episode? The head is the center of buddhi or intelligence. But head is also the seat of doubt and ignorance. To eradicate the vices in individuals, naturally ignorance has to be cut off, right? We need to cut off ignorance. So thus, Ram was cutting off the heads of Ravan. But every time he cut off one of the heads of Ravan, it grew back. It simply means that when we attempt to destroy our ignorance, like say for example when you come for satsang, or when we, you know, acquire some divine knowledge, hear, read some divine knowledge, the moment we step out of satsang, again ignorance comes up. So while we are in satsang and we're hearing nice things, everything makes sense. But the moment you step out of it, again, head comes up, right? Again, doubt starts coming up, basically. So, the moment you step out of satsang, ignorance comes up again. So, just as the head is the center of thought, arms is the center of action. Bad thoughts needs to be cut off. Also, bad actions need to be cut off. So, Ram was not only cutting off the head of Ravan, but he also cutting off the hand of Ravan, basically. So society does not just need only a change in thinking, but also it needs a change in behavior. That is the indication, that is the understanding of how cutting off the head and cutting off the hands of Ravan is important. So to win war against evil, it is not at all easy. The war against evil is a continuous war. It's not a momentary victory. You know, so like for example, you do little good. Doing little good is not the solution to all the problems in this world. You have to keep doing good again and again and again and again, basically. And therefore, because every time you do good, don't think goodness will prevail. Ignorance will keep coming up. These heads will keep popping up, basically. So we have to keep, the fight has to keep going on and on and on. It's not a one-time fight. It's not that I've done once good enough. It's never enough. So by getting innumerable heads and arms, Ravan thought he could become immortal, basically. But his calculations went wrong. Not just that, actually this head-cutting thing was a very insulting episode for Ravan. How was it insulting? Think about it from this point of view. When Ravan died, there were hundreds of heads all over the battlefield and hundreds of his arms all over the battlefield. So when they cremated Ravan, you know, when you ideally cremate a person, you cremate the body of the person, right? But this guy's hundreds of heads are still there on the battlefield. They didn't cremate all of that. That vultures were eating, basically. All the birds were eating. So it's a very insulting death in one sense, you know. So he thought he became immortal by having unlimited heads, but actually it's very insulting. So most people associate greatness with the ability to perform great miracles. By this standard, Ravan performed so many great miracles. But Ram, he actually struggled to achieve anything in life. So Ravan could fly across the ocean. Ram had to build a huge bridge across the ocean, you know. Ram had to fast to please the ocean gods. Ravan had all the gods under his command, basically. Ravan, you know, never seemed to get injured, so and it's so difficult to kill him. But Ram is getting injured so many times, you know, in the battle. Miracles are not the indicator of a greatness of a person. Saintly people use their powers for the welfare of the world. Ram could have easily used his powers, right, to dry up the ocean. He could have easily built a bridge automatically. He could have easily killed Ravan automatically. He had so many powers to do miracles. But the interesting part about great people is they don't use their powers for themselves. They use their powers for the welfare of society. And the nature of arrogant people is that they use their powers to display their greatness. So Indrajit represents lust, Kumbhakarna represents ego, Ravan represents illusion. Even after destroying lust and ego, illusion survives. To destroy illusion, one needs the grace of Guru. That's why Agastya Rishi came in at that point. Agastya Rishi didn't come during the whole war. Agastya Rishi came exactly when Ravan had to be dealt with. Because to destroy illusion, no one can help you, including God. Only Guru can help you. Even God takes the help of Guru to deal with illusion, basically. And that is the power of the spiritual master's presence in our life, you know. So Ravan's head also represents numerous attachments we have in life. Just when you feel one attachment is gone, another attachment comes up. And, you know, it's not enough to simply attack your attachments. Along with attacking all the attachments, you have to attack the source of all attachments. What is the source of all attachments? It's Chitta. The navel of Ravan represents your sanskar. So if you attack all your attachments one by one, that is not going to solve the problem. So you have to attack the consciousness. Therefore, Prabhupada always said, you know, it is not about changing your lifestyle, your behavior. You have to change your consciousness. Therefore, the society is called International Society for Krishna Consciousness. So we are not attacking our externals, attachments and all that. We are attacking our consciousness. And that is the root of all habit development. So by studying this whole episode of Ravan war, we are actually studying a lot about our own internal journey as sadhakas. Dashara is not an external festival that we are seeing, you know, and fellow, we have these Ravan, you know, melas where somebody shoots an arrow and kills Ravan, and by shooting the arrow we think we have destroyed that Ravan. No. One head goes, one more head will appear, right? So this is a very, very strong and it's a symbolic representation of what we need to do on our daily lives and how we need to deal with it very diligently with the help of our spiritual master and keeping God in front of us. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Ram, Ram Ram.